If you love an Aussie underdog who punches above, look no further than Bluebet, the true blue Aussie bookie. Download the Bluebet app today and bet Australian. Conditions apply. Gamble responsibly. The Rush Hour. Gus Warland, Jude Bolton and Wendell Saylor. This is the Triple M Rush Hour.
Welcome to the Rush Hour, an absolute cracking afternoon. How are you, Jude? How are you? You got your Guns N' Roses t-shirt on, mate. You're looking good.
I have. I've got the bit of merch, official merch from Guns N' Roses the other night. Gee, it was awesome, mate. So it got home safely under my poncho and then roll it out today.
Did you Beautiful. Buy that or did you get it given to you?
No, we bought it. Oh, okay, sweet. Please.
How are you, Del?
Not a freeloader like you, Del.
Oh, please. Oh, mate, I'm good, mate. Have a look at me, mate. Looking a treat. Great time of the year. And as I said to you before, mate, I just love it. You know, there's cricket, there's World Cup's on, and Christmas is just around the corner, mate.
No, you're exactly right. We've got John Brewster from the Angels kind of join us for about 20 minutes a little bit later in the show. But what about this, boys? A result for all the people from New South Wales. The New South Wales government has been forced to cancel more than $30 million in fines for breaches of the COVID-era public health orders. You know when they were going around giving away $1,000 fines if you were sort of sitting in a park with a mate or something like that? Well, they took it to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court has said, you know what? You can't do that. It's not right. So if you've already been fined and you've paid it, you will be refunded. If you haven't paid it yet, screw it up, chuck it in the bin. You are all good to go.
Absolute common sense from my perspective. 33,000 COVID-era fines, Del. So it's good to see the people in New South Wales getting a bit of cash back.
I know what they're trying to do, but we were doing it tough enough. We didn't need that lumped on us as well. So well done there. So great decision.
It doesn't happen very often, though, does it, Jude, where you actually you get a fine and you... Because sometimes you go, I might write a letter and get out of this, but it's actually a good result for the common man and woman out there because we have had it super tough.
You're saying common sense is not that common, aren't you? That's what
Correct.
You're saying.
Yeah. Exactly right. So a good result, and thank you to the New South Wales government for doing that. But let's talk a little bit of sport now. There's some games of football across in Qatar, boys. We can't call it what it actually is, but results overnight, Cameroon and Serbia, for me, the best game of the competition so far, 3-3. Korea and Republic, 2. Ghana 3. Brazil got the result against Switzerland this morning. Then Portugal beat Uruguay. Of course, we know that the Socceroos are on 11 p.m. tomorrow night against Denmark. Just a draw there will get us through to the second round, which would be amazing. And England, if you're interested, 3 a.m. in the morning. So that's what's been happening. Have you enjoyed the football?
Oh, it's been awesome. I mean, just seeing even the South Korean coach get red carded as well at the end. And he'll miss... he'll be on the sideline for South Korea's final match against Portugal on Friday as well. So incredible. There's been some unbelievable moments. And you mentioned that Cameroon-Serbia game.
Yeah, good,
just phenomenal.
It was 3-1 in the blink of eye, and all of a sudden it was like 3-all.
Bang. Yeah. Yep. So no, it was terrific to watch. So excited, though, for the Socceroos, though. Can't wait for that later on the week.
Exactly. 11 p.m. tomorrow against Denmark. Does it change everyone's attitude, the fact that we just need a draw to go through rather than a win? Because it must be difficult to sort of play a game thinking you don't really need to win it.
No, I think you have to go with the mindset, we've got to win this, because anything less will be okay. You know, you don't want a loss, but you get the draw, well, that's, you know, that's still a win. But I think you've got to play for the win because it teaches you good habits.
2 a.m. Thursday, on the 1st of December, 2 a.m. start. Mm. So there'll be people, a few sorry eyes on Friday morning, I'd bet.
I tell you what, boys, I'm over here in Perth. I flew up this morning, left Sydney early this morning, and it is beautiful. It's going to be over 30 degrees for every single day of the test match against the West Indies, and they're hoping to get to sell some more tickets because it has been really, really tough to sell the tickets off the back of so much cricket already this summer, and they're playing at the new Optus, which is that 60,000-seater. It's not at the Wacker where, you know, 15,000 pretty much filled it. So we're hoping for a bigger crowd, and we're back on with the cricket tomorrow morning.
What did you think of the Australian lineup?
Yeah, so they've gone with exactly the same team, but pretty much played in Pakistan. So Khawaja and Warner at the top there, then it pretty much picks itself. Scott Boland's probably the only one that you've got to feel a little bit unlucky for, but when you've got bowlers like Hazelwood and Cummins and Stark, and you've got Lyon bowling the offies, it sort of pretty much picks itself, with Carey as the keeper and Green as the all-rounder, and of course, you know, Smithy there in the middle order with Labuschagne and Head. So that's going to be the team, and of course, we're just hoping to get off to a good start this summer. There's two tests against the Windies, and then three tests against South Africa.
Gus, how will the crowd, you know, take in the Aussie cricket team there? Because, you know, they love JL. And then I just saw before on social media, Pat Cummins said there's no cowards in the Australian team.
You know? Yeah, no, there's been so much drama. And, of course, JL, people don't know, Justin Langer's a Western Australian who came out after 10 months of pretty much saying nothing.
Yes.
He came out on the eve of this test series and said there was a couple of players that were saying one thing to his face and then one thing behind his back and called a couple of players cowards. So it's just an unnecessary distraction for the players to have to deal with now. But you're right, Del. I got in a cab here to come to the station this afternoon. The bloke goes, "You're that cricket bloke, aren't you?" I said, "Oh, yeah, that's right, mate." And he goes, "Mate, what they did to JL is a disgrace. I'm not going to the cricket just because of that."
Yeah.
And don't be surprised if the Aussie team gets a little bit of a, I don't know, not booing, but certainly not the
so
rousing applause.
Yeah, incredibly parochial. Also, last night, the AFL draft's first night, massive. We've got the number one draft pick. We went to the Giants, Aaron Cadman, in the second hour of the show, so can't wait to chat to him. There's a young star likened to a, like a Jeremy Cameron. The Giants also picked up Harry Rouston, one of their academy picks. Sydney grabbed a young small forward like Tom Papley. His name's Jacob Constante. So, and then the Giants picked up Darcy Jones with the final pick of the first round last night. So,
hey, Jude, I heard that the Swans didn't play by the rules very well last night. They didn't break any rules, but they certainly didn't play in the spirit. A lot of blokes over here in Western Australia saying the Swans, and asked Jude about it.
Bit of skullduggery, or shithousery, as I like to confirm. But all within the rules. Kadeem Beetson, he's just one of the great architects. He's the recruiting officer for Sydney, and he just basically bid on the academy product for the Giants just to flush out the first round draft pick from them, and then went also after a father son for Adelaide just to bid on him, just to get a little bit back from a Jordan Dawson trade last year, and then offloaded the next pick, so he actually didn't even need it. So he just offloaded AFL, the Hawthorn. So
AFL people not being gentlemanly, that's a disgrace. Hey. When has your advice flopped? Tell us what we're meaning with this, Jude.
Oh, well, it stems on the back of me having a chat to my 10-year-old daughter. And, you know, you're always trying to impart wisdom. You know, kids never listen to their parents. I know that. I was a bit the same as a kid. But, you know, I thought... I was trying to shape a story around, you know, being able to do stuff for yourself, to be able to live out in the big wide world. And I thought, how can I frame this? And I started talking. I said, do you know Bear Grylls to my daughter? And she goes, yeah. Like she's, you know, watched Man versus Wild and different stuff. Mm. She's done different things. Anyway, and I was sort of trying to talk about being self-sufficient. You know, why is he able to go out and survive? And he does stuff for himself. He's able to just fend for himself. And she just looked at me square between the eyes and goes, "Dad, I know what you're doing." Like, and she's only 10. She goes, "You just want me to put away my clothes and stuff like that." But like basically just threw it back at me, and you know, like this whole thing. She just could see straight through me, and I was just devastated. It was just my advice flopped immediately.
She's just like your wife already. What about you, Del?
I don't give too much advice, but like I remember when Matisse, and it sort of backfired on me because when you give advice, you know, you got to make sure it doesn't sort of. So I was trying to be the grown up, and you know, I'm like a big kid anyway.
Yeah.
So Matisse was having a bit of trouble at school and that, and I was just saying, you know what, Matisse, sometimes you just got to understand you got to love yourself before you love others. And she said, she looks at me and she goes, "Oh, Dad, don't worry, you got that covered." So probably for me, I wasn't the one because I'm always loving myself, looking in front of the mirror, so. You know,
what about this moment? If I can take you to the SCG, Australia versus India, chock a blocking. Imagine the Indian crowd have piled into the SCG. They're making a lot of noise. It's before the toss on the first day. Adam Spencer, who's a great friend of the show and a great friend of yours in particular, Jude, and the Swannies. He's a wordsmith. He's an intelligent man. So the Australian cricket team have asked him to come to give some motivation advice to the team. So imagine him in the middle, beautiful sunny day, and he brings the team in. He's standing in the middle of a circle. Got all the physios, the doctors, the players, the coaches, they're all around. And he says he decides he wants to go sort of short and sharp and leave them with something they can really take home. So he says to them, "Some people watch history. Some people read history. You have the opportunity to write your own history here today." And the boys are pumped. They're excited.
Run through brick walls.
The toss happens and so forth. The Australians get into the field and they go, "Come on, let's get behind it. We'll get some nice early wickets." Well, at the end of the day, India were 1 for 329. Oh. Steve Waugh walks past Adam Spencer at the end and goes, "Never talk to my team again."
Oh.
So that's what we're talking about. 1-3-3-5-3. When has your advice flopped?
Let's go to Jim in Springwood. How are you, Jim?
Not too bad, Jude. Yourself?
Not too bad, mate. When has your advice flopped?
Oh, look, my son, he's about 24 now. When he was about 12, yeah, about 12,
yep.
He had these things called Bitcoins. And he said to me, what do you think of this, Dad? And I said, oh, it's a load of rubbish, mate. Yeah, storm in a teacup. Won't last. And he said, I'm thinking of swapping two of them for a laser pointer. You know those laser pointers that you... Yeah. And I said, yeah, mate, I'd do it if you want the laser pointer. You do it. Do it, because they're worth nothing, those things. They're rubbish. Well... Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. cost him thousands. Oh,
I bet wow. You we remind you of it all the time as well.
Oh, daily, pal, daily.
Good on you.
Mate, that's sensational, so Jim. What about you, Dale?
Well, listening to, Gus talk about that story before, took me back to an Origin sort of moment where sometimes, you know, you get players like Gordon Tellstone, they're the voices of the Sheds. And then this one time there, you know, you talk about bad advice or just you should know your place. Matty Rogers.
Yeah.
Mate, he was a pretty fair player, played above his weight. And this one time, you know, he got pumped up and New South Wales had obviously beaten us 2-0 and we didn't want to get whitewashed. All of a sudden, Matty Rogers, he starts, you know, talking it up and saying, this is what we got to do. And he goes, and boys, all we need to know is, you know what, you're going to have to carry me off that field because I don't want to let these guys bloody beat us. Anyway, we got beaten 56-16 in that Origin game. And then we're in the shower. Like, we didn't make fun of it, but Gordy goes, looks over Matty Rogers, goes, hey, boys, did anyone carry Matty Rogers off the field?
Did he get knocked out?
He got knocked out and we got beaten by, you know, 30, you know, 40 points or whatever. So, yeah.
You got to know your place, you that's do. For sure.
Mate, my mum tried to give me some advice at one stage about footy. And I'm like, Mum, don't just be my mum. Don't be my coach. She was going, dude, you just got to get in close to the football. Like, you're not really near it. And I just had this huge shoulder injury. Like, was separated my AC joint. So I was literally hobbling around on the ground. And I've turned around and go, Mum, do you want me to sit right next to you in the crowd? Because if I don't play like this, I can't play. And she's like, yeah, fair point. And then she just went back in her box. And then
you got to know your role. You got to stay in your lane.
Watched enough footy, but
no. I say it to my wife all the time: stay in your lane, babe. The Angels music documentary Kicking Down the Door is in cinemas on Thursday. Let's have a chat.
Next guest is Australian music royalty. He was a founding member of the Angels, and he's also spent time with the Party Boys. And we don't just mean the band, we mean the Party Boys. Like, he's partied with AC/DC, he's partied with Bowie and probably millions more. In 2008, he was inducted into the Australian Songwriters Hall of Fame. Please welcome to the Rush Hour. No way, get off. It's not John Brewster, is it?
Yes, it certainly is John Brewster. Welcome to the show. John, how are you this afternoon?
Oh, great, and even better after that intro.
Mate, lot of respect and a lot of love for you here, mate. Thank you so much for joining us. Tell us about the band in the early years, and how did you and your brother Rick meet Doc Neeson?
Yeah, well, Doc joined the Moonshine Jug and String Band about a year into that band's life, and so that was about 72, I think, and we started the Angels in 74, kind of because I wrote a song, and we recorded it with a jug band and had a hit, but I think mainly because Mum bought most of the records, but we had a hit in Adelaide, and I went to Rick and I said, we got to start a rock band, and he immediately agreed. I then spent all night talking Doc into it, and so that's how the Angels formed. And of course, it's been a pretty amazing ride for 48 years now. We're coming up 50 years pretty soon. It's very exciting.
Yeah.
But of course, there's a sad side to it too, because Doc's no longer with us. Chris Bailey passed away as well. So, but, you know, life goes on. And, we have the wonderful Gleeso. I can't talk about him without sort of chuckling a little bit. He destroys himself night after night on stage.
Amazing. We love him. He's amazing. Certainly a character and royalty here at Triple M.
John, you had huge success and some massive hits. I mean, like those times in the tour bus, how was those, like, those travelling parties at different stages?
Oh, it's fantastic. You know, you look back on those days and, you know, particularly the early days in Australia, because we had an old E.H. Holden station wagon and we drove around this country, like, you know, for 4 years before the band sort of hit the big time. And I think back in those days, you know, trading, you know, lyric ideas with Rick and Doc and you know, sleeping on people's floorboards because we couldn't afford the accommodation, playing 5 hours at Checkers for $100. And that's not each, by the way.
Right. Right. Yes.
Like, but you know, you look back at it and just go, well, you know, that's part of the journey, and it's a great great memory. I mean, obviously we were really young, so we could do that. But it's been amazing, and it still is, to be honest.
Mate, tell us a bit about Doc Neeson. We know he was the ultimate showman, but can you tell us what he was like away from the stage?
Well, put it this way, we'd be driving around Australia. We'd stop at some oval, and we'd get the frisbees out, and throw frisbees around. And Doc would go around the corner, sit on a bench and read Shakespeare. Wow. So and somehow or other, that frisbee always found him. It would go around the corner and hit him on the head. No, Doc was he was kind of a quiet fellow, really. And then he would go for a run before he walked on stage. And he'd do this massive run so that when he hit the stage, he was, already sweating. He was ready to go. And then we'd finish the show, and then he'd be lying, on a cement floor trying to cool down. he was a great showman.
Yeah, and much love. There's no doubt about that. We spent a lot of time with him here at Triple M. Yeah. You left the band back in 86. You joined the Party Boys, another fantastic band. Why did you leave? Was there some tension? I suppose that'll come out in the documentary around the band, as most bands have. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, the documentary does deal with some emotional things. And we had a fantastic director in Madeline Parry. She's just wonderful. And she knew how to press the buttons, she'd ask certain questions, tell me about your dad or something or other, and you couldn't help but being reflective and then feeling a little bit emotional. So both Rick and I got choked up in the movie, and Doc's son Kieran did as well. I mean, it's there's a real emotional side to it. I think the movie is actually fantastic. I'm really happy with it. Had no input into how it was done. We didn't want to, we just thought, let her tell the story. So she deals really with that period 76 to 86 when so many things happened and we were touring the world and, tensions developed. A lot of it was through huge financial pressures. I always had the responsibility of looking after the financial side of the band because I did, for some reason, I did accountancy before I formed the Angels. And the pressures were huge over in America in that 1985 tour. We were just losing money hand over fist.
John, how did you, reconcile some of those differences and the tensions they had in the band?
It was really, the main thing was Rick and me. I called Rick up one day and I said, listen, and this is 5 years into me not being in the band anymore. And I called Rick up and I said, look, when we get together, we're friendly. I said, but we're not close. I said, there's a wall between us. I want to kick that wall down. Mm. And Rick said, I've been waiting 5 years for this phone call. And I said, oh, why didn't you make the phone call to me? And he said, no, it had to come from you. See, I'm the big brother.
I see.
Yeah, see, amazing. Big brother's bad. We're bad.
Yeah, I was going to ask that because in that environment, not everyone's going to get along. Obviously, there's a bit of drinking, there's partying, and sometimes, I know myself in a team environment, in a band environment, it'd be hard sometimes to be always up, and be consistent.
Oh, it's really hard. I mean, there's a lot of tiredness involved. We were touring America, and you'd have to get on a plane at 6 o'clock in the morning, or you'd be driving, hundreds of miles to the next gig, and so there's a lot of tiredness involved, and yes, there were other things. We were partying and doing things we shouldn't have been doing, but it's just part of the reality of being young people and being in a rock and roll band,
Half your luck, mate. We would have all loved to have been there with you, that's for sure.
John, I want to take you back to 1975. I think it was the Sunbury Pop Festival that really secured you the gig to tour with AC/DC. Tell us how that happened.
Yeah, well, AC/DC, we met in South Australia because that's where we come from. We come from Adelaide, and we got offered three gigs with AC/DC. It was Port Pirie, Whyalla, and Port Augusta. We're sitting in the hotel in Port Pirie, and in walked AC/DC, and within half an hour, we're all mates. We weren't that good then, but they saw something in us, Angus and Malcolm and Bon, and they came out to us when we were in Whyalla, and I think Malcolm did most of the talking. He said, listen, we want to go back and tell, Brother George about you, George Young, and Harry Vander. And true to their word, they did. And that's how we got signed to Alberts, and we became part of that family. It was the Alberts family was just amazing.
Oh, it's fantastic. Just to hear you talk about it, we wish that we could have been there with you, but it's lovely to hear your dulcet tones about it. The Angels documentary, Kicking Down the Door, is in cinemas on Thursday. You said you loved it. That's fantastic. I'm sure we will too. So thanks so much, John, for spending a bit of time with us this afternoon, and best of luck with it.
And can I mention, we love Sydney. None of us, our drummer lives in Sydney, but we're doing the Bridge Hotel. We're doing 15, 16, 17 of December, just leading up to Christmas. Mm. 15 is the Thursday. So we put the Thursday in because the other two, I think, have sold out already.
Wonderful.
So if you don't mind me sort of plugging that.
No problem. We'll make sure we put that on our socials as well. The 15th, 16th, 17th of December, leading up to Christmas, the Angels are playing at the Bridge Hotel. Fantastic, yeah, mate. We'll be there.
We love the Bridge. It's one of the last bastions of the old pub rock thing, you know. It's great.
Well, nothing quite like you blokes to rock it out that night. John Brewster, thanks so much for joining us.
Great to talk to you guys.
Good thanks on you. Wow, what a just legend.
Champion.
Australian royalty. Boys, I want to tell you about the flight I had this morning. Jumped on the Virgin flight at 6 o'clock this morning, came out of Sydney. So I got to the airport just after 4 o'clock. Had a couple of coffees. Then I decided not to have a feed at the lounge. I decided to wait to have a feed on board,
yep,
which is what I did. And it was a lovely sort
front
of egg
of the plane.
And bacon.
Hang on. Just front of, you're front of the plane.
Your business.
1D. 1D.
Oh,
yeah, yes. Mate, you don't fly the big dog economy when he's flying across the country. Let's just say that.
I'm pretty sure I was here, mate. I wasn't there, yeah.
Mate, do you get business class when you get flown around with the rugby league?
Yes, mate, I do.
Well, then you know the big dogs where we sit then, brother. So there we go. So I'm hoping in a second bacon and so forth, and then my tummy just started to rumble. And it's always been a law of mine or a rule, you never do a number two on a plane.
Yep.
Never on a plane, mate. A wee is fine, but not a number two.
Correct.
But I had another 3.5 hours to go on this 5-hour trip, so I took the journey and I walked up and opened up the door, and I've never seen a smaller toilet in my life.
Yeah.
Literally the smallest toilet. It was packed in against the cockpit right at the front of this Virgin plane. I literally got my gear off, but as I tried to sit down and work myself in, I actually flushed the toilet because I couldn't get everything in place, you know what I mean, as I was trying to get myself comfy. So I wrestled through that,
people,
and I'm...
How do people join the Mile High Club in there? I don't know.
Well, there's no way anyone's joining the Mile High Club in the Virgin flight to Perth. Let me give you the big tip. Much better in business class in Qantas, maybe an international flight or something. But anyway, so I'm flushing the toilet a couple of times because I'm trying to angle myself, then I'm trying to clean myself up and so forth. It's very, very difficult for a big man in such a small spot. And then after I'm washing my hands and I've got myself organised and I've tucked myself back in, I just had that little moment saying, please, when I open the door, do not have anyone standing there.
Waiting, yes.
They're queued
and waiting.
Up. Were they queued up?
So I go, open it, open up, and there was a man and a woman. And there was nothing else I could do about it because they were about to walk into Armageddon, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I just put my hands up and I went, I just want to apologize. And then I shut the door and walked back to my seat and just left them to it. So
you
those
are a
people,
disgrace, Wallen.
I want to apologise. Time now for this.
Our next guest has just been taken as the number one draft pick in the AFL draft by GWS. It's Aaron Cadman.
There he is, the big fella. Must have been a fantastic night last night. Welcome to the show, big fella.
Yeah, no, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on. Last night was surreal. It was just better than I could have ever imagined it went. So, yeah, no, it was a pretty special night.
Aaron, it's Jude Bolt, mate. Congratulations. I mean, you were left out of the Vic Country's initial squad of 50 players at the start of the year, but then you came in and then you made All Australian at the Nationals. How that meteoric rise this year, how did it feel for you?
Yeah, no, that was awesome. Because I kind of come into the year as a winger, as a skinny wingman, and then the coach of the Rebels sat me down and said, we might throw you down forward for a couple of games and see how you go. And thank God he did, because it worked out pretty well in the end. So, yeah, no, I'm really fortunate. With the blokes at the Rebels, all the coaches down there have helped me lots to improve my game and my footy smarts and everything like that. So, yeah, no, they've been massive in my rise. And, yeah, no, I can't thank them enough.
Mate, what's your family going to do, mate? They're going to be down now. An apprentice electrician, mate. So what are you going to do there, mate?
He's already replaced me. He's out with the old Nimmin.
Good stuff, mate. Oh, congratulations.
Now, certainly Giants need you, mate. It's been a tough old time since they got beaten in that grand final, and there's a lot of support out there. They want a winning team. Do you feel that? Do you feel that sort of pressure already, or is it one of those things where you're just going to be part of the system and you're going to slowly but surely work your way in?
Yeah, I think it's just one of those things that where it's kind of out of my control. I think if I can get in there and establish some good relationships with the players and hopefully there's a good culture around the boys and everyone buys in and hopefully we can play as a team. And I think that's when all the winning will come and when we're all close and we're all on the same page.
And everyone sort of likened you to a Jeremy Cameron type player and you've got a chance to sort of interact with him over the time and have a few coffees. What was that like to sort of speak to Jeremy Cameron and sort of pick his brains about elite footy?
Yeah, it was really special. I was lucky enough, yeah, to have a few coffee dates with him and, pick his brain as much as I could. He was really good. He just gave me some really good pointers on some to do in footy and then outside of footy. So obviously me and him are similar builds. We're not the strongest blokes going around and that stuff. So, he was just giving me tips on body position and how to match up against those bigger, stronger defenders. And then he was also telling me about, obviously he's got his release from footy. He's got that balance with his farm and his comedy stuff that he does on Instagram. So he was just making sure you always got to balance between life and try not get too caught up in all the footy stuff.
Well, it's good you bring that up too. For a young bloke now, like social media is such a big part of it now. Even in the Socceroos, you know, they were talking about how, the coach was saying, look, he doesn't really want to be on social media. You know, obviously a big win. But even for you young guys, I know you get educated on that and it's up to what you guys do with your social media, isn't it?
Yeah. Social media is huge nowadays. So no matter what you do, it's always on there. So, yeah, you got to be as careful as possible.
Aaron, when you're growing up, who were your sporting heroes?
I was a big cricket man. I used to play cricket growing up. I was probably a bit more cricket than footy actually growing up, but that sort of faded away slowly. Also, I played a little bit of basketball just for fun. And then my hero was Jack Riewoldt because I was a big Tiger boy growing up, and the way he used to go about it and on and off the field, and yeah, he was just a special person to me.
Well, mate, it's so wonderful to hear that excitement in your voice. Congratulations. We look forward to catching up with you in the build-up to the new AFL season. Have a great time when you come up on Thursday. And welcome to the Giants. Welcome to Sydney. And thanks for your time this arvo, Aaron.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Cheers, mate. Pleasure.
Absolute pleasure. Aaron Cadman there, the number one pick in the AFL draft. Time now for this. Yeah, we haven't done it for a long time. If you don't know this one, Jude's going to be throwing out some subjects, some questions, five of them.
Categories.
And then he goes 3, 2, 1, and you and me, Del, we have to lock eyes, we have to connect, and we have to come up with the same answer. Last time we did this together, it did not end well. I think it was 1 out of 5.
Well, the way you can actually get a point is just by saying the most bleedingly obvious answer.
That's what I would do.
You two seem to complicate this more than anything
else. Del is a different cat. You know, not in a nice way. I think one of the questions was an iconic Australian beach. And well, 3, 2, 1, Bondi, which of course everyone would say. He said Manly.
He's probably thinking of you.
I know.
Silvertail, Northern Suburbs.
Yeah. Okay, let's go. Okay. Big fella.
Are we ready to roll?
Yeah.
Channel HR. Here we go.
I'm channeling you. So you're looking good, mate.
Yeah, no.
Thanks.
A fruit in 3, 2, 1.
Apple. Orange.
Mate!
I didn't even like it.
I've literally got an orange in front of me. Yeah. I've just eaten one.
But I don't care.
Oh.
Apple's my favourite fruit.
Apple a day.
Don't you love a mango?
Apple a day.
All right, here we go. Gosh, any danger.
Yeah. Jeez, that was a settler too, wasn't it?
Oh, mate, that was just an easy, it was a form finder, like just middle and off.
Yeah.
Just,
yeah, I know.
Ready,
full just put, banger.
Damn it. Full toss. There it is. A team at the Football World Cup. 3, 2, 1.
Socceroos.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Oh, wait, can you just say the right name? Like,
well, I said Australia. I said the right name. You said the nickname.
If
not called the Socceroos up there on the telly.
If I'd said other than Australia, what would you have said?
Germany.
I would have said Japan.
Exactly.
Because he loves sushi.
All right. Yeah. I'm glad I kept this easy. Yeah. All right. A host of the project in 3, 2, 1.
Kerry.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. We know why you said Kerry.
Yeah, she's my favourite.
Mate, you brushed our boss at the radio awards to dance with her.
Yeah, Boosh deserved that. She's still not so upset with you. That's right.
Did you say Kerry?
Yeah,
did you say Kerry?
It's Kerry.
Whatever. I haven't watched that show, mate. Okay. Honestly. Everyone's saying the project's got new hosts. I go, who were those originally?
Come on, okay. A Christmas song in 3, 2, 1.
Jingle Bells.
Yep.
Yep. Did he say that?
He went jingles.
Yeah. Jingles.
Jingles.
A jingle bell, a jingle bell.
Hey, we're on it.
Okay. Yeah. How many's that?
That's 3 out of 4.
That's it.
And
that's
we missed jingle. Apple and orange.
Right. Yeah, okay.
Okay, come on. This is going to be all. Yeah. This is a world record.
To finish this off, here we go. Something you'd find at a New Year's Eve party. 3, 2, 1.
Alcohol.
Yeah. Come on!
Dropped the ball with apples and oranges. Yeah, they are literally picking each other up in the studio.
God, he's so strong.
He's so strong.
Beautiful.
He's just lifted Gus Warland off the ground.
Here we go.
Well done, fellas. Well done.
4 from 5 and missed out on the apple and the orange.
Yeah, I know.
Could have been the all-time
anyway,
5 from 5.
It's good. I'm happy with that.
Send our best to Kerry Bickmore.
Time now to talk to this lady.
You're going to get to know our next guest a whole lot better from here on in. She's already one of Australia's best journalists. She's worked with Channel 10, CNN, Channel 9, 60 Minutes, but now she's about to wrangle the big Carlos. Let's all give a big
hello and welcome to you
to the new host of the Today Show, Sarah Arbo.
Yes, a big hello to Sarah Arbo. Welcome to the show and congratulations.
Hello, I'm good. How are you?
Mate, we are very well. Now, I reckon you are going to be the perfect host for the Today Show. Were you expecting it? Did this come out of the blue? Congratulations.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it's super exciting, isn't it? It's going to be quite the adjustment, though, I have to say. I mean, it's 3 a.m. alarms aren't going to be much fun, I don't think, but I'll hopefully adjust.
Sarah, I mean, we all know Carl super well, and he's a bit of a rogue at times. How are you going to contain him at times?
Do you know, I've had a taste of that rogue Carl that we all know and love in the times I've been filling in, and I'm ready for it, I reckon. I mean, I don't want to speak too soon. I don't want to speak too early, but what I've seen so far, I really like. He's such a... I mean, we all see that side of him, but behind the scenes, he's actually very, very professional and is an incredible broadcaster. So it's actually quite a privilege to sit next to him and to learn from him as well. I'm looking forward to that.
Sarah, you've been all over the world with your job. Is this your dream job? When you sit down, you think, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life. Is this it?
You know what? It's sort of like 60 minutes is your dream job, right? Because you want to meet people. I mean, I love meeting people. I love helping them tell their stories and, you know, the ability to sort of travel around the world and the country to meet them is such a privilege. And I think what Today Show does is it means that we're doing it on a daily basis. You know, like we're literally interacting with people live on air. They're letting us into their homes. And then, you know, we're inviting them onto the show and we're getting to know a little bit more about them and introducing them to the rest of the country. And that's so special and so unique. And as a journo, that's such, like, I mean, that's a thrill for us. So, I'm so excited about it.
It's that real mix between sort of hard-hitting at times because you'd be talking to the Prime Minister or ministers, yep. And then there's days where you, me and Carl were out there at Panthers before the grand final when you're chatting to... You're chatting to punters out there,
so
it's a real you got to play different roles, don't you? And sometimes that's, you know, one side of the commercial break to the other.
Yeah, and you know what? That's the part I actually love. You know, it's been so nice to have a bit of a laugh on air as well. You know, the times I've been filling in, and just to sort of show a bit of my personality, and to just roll with it. Like, I think the beauty of live television is you don't quite know what's going to come next, so you need to be prepared for everything. And to be able to show that raw and sort of authentic reaction and emotion, you know, it's great because we're all human at the end of the day. So to be able to convey those emotions live on air is an incredible opportunity. It's interesting. I'm excited about what's to come, but I'm also like, a little bit nervous, I have to say.
Did Ellie give you any heads up of what to expect, Sarah? I mean, Breakfast TV is the big ticket item. Has your life changed already or not?
Not quite. It's going to change very quickly, very soon, though, because I'm based in Melbourne. So I'll be making the big move up to Sydney, the big smoke. Which has been one of those things I've resisted for most of my career up until now, but it's sort of an opportunity that you can't really, you know, turn down. And you know, when I asked if the show could come down here, of course, that was a hard no, so I didn't get my way there. But Ali, you know, to answer your question, has been incredible, and I love Ali. I mean, I love watching her. I think she's just one of the best, another incredible broadcaster so lucky to have within the Nine family, and I just think she's going to do such an exceptional job in the ACA chair. I can't wait to just watch her, you know, take over.
Well, it's funny you say that. We like to have a bit of fun here. We had a bit of fun last week. There was a moment there where Tracy Grimshaw and Ellie were there and Ellie got left hanging. I don't know what that feels like. I've never been left hanging. What's your thoughts on that?
Oh, yeah. I reckon there was a bit behind that, boys.
Okay. That's nice. At least you're honest.
No, of course not.
Look, Sarah, it's going to be awesome working with you. It's awesome that you're doing the big job there on today. And we look forward to seeing you when you start up on the 16th of January. Enjoy your Christmas, your move up to Sydney, and we'll look forward to seeing you again next year.
Thanks, guys. And Merry Christmas. Happy holidays to you all as well.
Thank you.
There you go. Sarah Arbo, the brand new host of The Today Show. The Rush Hour with Gus, Jude and Wendell. Weekdays.